Well, it's great to be with you all this morning. Got a deep appreciation for Union University. Got a deep appreciation for Jackson, Tennessee. My parents met in this town 56 years ago. 10 days after meeting, they were engaged, which I would not recommend. And we just celebrated their 56th wedding anniversary this past December. And so literally apart from Jackson, Tennessee, I wouldn't be here. I'm excited to be able to lead your chapel time. I got to admit, I kind of have a chapel wound. Went 4 years to Asbury College where we had mandatory chapel 3 times a week. Reluctantly, 3 years later, went to Dallas Seminary where we had mandatory chapel 3 times a week. So I've probably sat in 800 or 900 mandatory chapels. Most of them did not much for me. A lot of that was the condition of my heart, but a couple of them, God just exploded my heart and met me there. And so I am grateful for that. What I want to do this morning, in light of all that, is just kind of share with you something fun. Come from a little bit of a different angle. One of the ways we talk about our relationship with Christ is using the vertical realities of that, that have horizontal implications. And so in our church or with the guys I'm discipling, I'll often point them to the vertical realities of the gospel, all the beautiful theological words that I've been propitiated for and redeemed and adopted into the family of God and in the nature and the character of God, who he is, his goodness, his greatness. He's omniscient, he's omnipresent, he is good, and we sing of that, we celebrate him, and there are all kinds of beautiful realities about the fact that we have been reconciled with God based on a righteousness, not our own. It's the scandal of the gospel that's been imputed to us and affords us all these beautiful, wonderful relationship with God, knowledge and experiences that apart from Jesus we wouldn't have. And so we need to talk about that a lot. What we tend to not quite spend as much time on are then the horizontal demands of the gospel. And again, last year we talked about the way that the gospel works itself into and revolutionizes our view of race and culture and ethnicity, and the way we see ourselves as a single, as Lord willing one day a parent, a spouse, how we handle our money, how we handle our time. Like, in a lot of ways, that's what your spiritual growth, that's what my spiritual growth is. It's the gospel weaving itself into every nook and cranny of our life. And so what I want to do this morning is talk about some of those horizontal realities, specifically in the area of relationships. I thought about when I was an 18 to 22-year-old or a 23, 24-year-old, what I would have liked to have been told about life from a 44-year-old, and that's what I stand before you today as. And after living 20 years beyond my years in college, I'm shocked to have learned how much of my joy, how much of my happiness, how much of my life is marked by relationships. My ability to relate well with other people has marked a huge portion of my life. Maybe that's why 25 of the 27 New Testament books talk about the church as a family and those family relationships, or why 44% of your New Testament is written about interpersonal relationships. So I've got, we're going to look at the book of Proverbs. Doesn't get preached a lot. I've got about 29 Proverbs I'm going to give you, and then I'm going to give you a proverb you can build your life on. So I've got a 30-point sermon, and I'm not kidding. And we've got about 20 minutes, so I'm going to talk fast, and you're going to listen fast, and we're going to be challenged from the book of Proverbs about how to relate to each other well. And I struggled to know how to title this because a lot of the Proverbs are warnings when it comes to interpersonal relationships. And so these are like warnings to us. So here's what I titled it. It's a horrible title, but it'll help you. 29 Ways to Alienate People, Isolate Yourself, End Up Without Community, With No Influence, and Terribly Lonely. Here we go. Be a bad listener. Be a bad listener. Proverbs 18:13 says, "He who gives an answer before he hears, let it be folly and shame to him." Are you a good listener? That's what the question that Proverbs begs. Do you listen to people well? Or does whoever is calling and texting you take precedence over whoever you're actually like physically with? Can you look people in the eye? Can you sit down and have a conversation? Can you engage someone well? Can you ask really good questions? Can you learn to listen even between the lines as someone is sharing with you? Have you learned how to go to a mentor and draw out from them wisdom? What kind of listener are you? Second one is be a know-it-all. Proverbs 12:23 says, "A wise man conceals knowledge, but in the heart of a fool, folly is made known." see, a wise person has learned that they don't have to volunteer all their knowledge all the time. In fact, another proverb says, don't cast your pearls before swine. Anyone in here love being around a know-it-all? No. Nobody likes a know-it-all. Know-it-alls don't even like know-it-alls. Yet some of us, bless our heart, which is the nice way in the South to go fool, you know what I'm saying? Tend to always have to give and offer our genius. Or you might have somebody in your, you know, circles who somebody tells a story, they've always got a bigger, better story. Somebody gives an example, they've got a better example. Somebody gives a take on something, and whether they know anything about it or not, they're going to give a have a take and an opinion. And so Proverbs warns against that. It tells us you've got two ears and one mouth, like use those proportionately. Like don't be a know-it-all. Any fool can just respond and say anything about anything. How about this one? Be argumentative. Proverbs 23 says that any fool will quarrel. Are you argumentative? Do you have a contentious spirit? Do you pride yourself in being honest, telling it like it is, keeping it real, getting it off your chest? You need to know the Bible never admonishes you and I to speak our mind. There's no verses in here that encourage you to do so. In fact, what is lifted up in Scripture is the refraining of your tongue, of not letting your words, your tongue, hurt people or add to situations in ways that aren't helpful. Speak the truth in love, but tone and timing always matter. Do you tend to be the relational drama, the common denominator of all the relational drama in your life? If so, you may want to do that differently. Like, don't be argumentative. How about this? Be loose-lipped. Proverbs 11:13 says, he that goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Loose lips. Are you a gossip? The Bible tells us not to associate with a gossip. Is information to you like currency that you deposit into this person about this other person, and you get scoop over here and you can't wait to post it over here, and you build your identity of being the man, the woman in the know, having all the dirt, having all the scoop, and you just kind of move, that's kind of like a currency to you. Many of us love to gossip, and that is so sad. Because you don't need to be smart to gossip. You don't need to be moral. You don't need to be pious. It takes no faithfulness or righteousness at all to be a gossip. And know this as well. He who gossips to you, gossips of you. So whoever that is in your life, giving you all the juicy little tidbits about everybody else's life, I can promise you is taking what they know about your life and exchanging that in order to get the currency they need. That's how a gossip operates. The Bible says, don't be a gossip. How about this? Be critical. Criticalness. Do you have a critical spirit? Does tearing something down make you feel important? Proverbs 16:21 says, the sweetness of speech increases persuasiveness. Like it calls us to be able to use our tongue, use our words, use our opinions, even our criticisms in a constructive way, in a persuasive way. And the way to do that is the sweetness of our words. It is so easy, so cheap, so intellectually pitiful to just be a raw critic. You need to know anyone can do that. Anyone can walk in and say, this ought to be better, that stinks, why don't they do that, that was horrible. Like, that doesn't take any brain power, that doesn't take any righteousness, that doesn't take any wisdom, that doesn't take any faithfulness. That's just raw humanity. That's just like pitiful. But 99 out of 100 people can identify a problem. I would want you to be and me to be that one in 100 that can identify it and create a solution and persuasively bring about real change in a way that betters and empowers other people. Don't just be a raw critic. How about this one? Be a big talker. Proverbs 25:14. He who boasts of his gifts falsely is like a cloud that brings no water. Now, I lived in Texas for 11 years. We call that all hat and no cattle. Are you a big talker? Are you someone whose mouth writes checks that your life and body can't cash? Are you someone who talks a big game but has no track record of faithfulness to back that up? Now, I work a lot every year with men and women right out of college, and a ministry called Downline Ministries, and we have emerging leaders in Memphis, and this is where we start, because it is a curse of us under 30 to often talk a big game, talk 8, 9, and 10, but you're not doing 2, 3s, and 4s. You love in your 20s to talk about building water wells in Rwanda and leading a incredible movement in China, and that you're going to be an unbelievable father, and you're going to be an amazing wife and mother, and you're going to do all these big 8, 9, 10 incredible things. That's what you declare with your mouth, but you can't get along with a roommate, you can't get up at the same time every morning, you can't balance a checkbook, and you can't show up to class consistently. You're talking 8, 9, and 10, and you can't do 2, 3, and 4. Most of us aren't faithful where we are with what's right in front of us and are scared to death, curious, wondering, begging God to show you his will for your life and want to know what the future holds. And we obsess with the future while being unfaithful where we are. What you need to know biblically, for every character in there, they had to learn to be faithful with what God had revealed in front of them. And as they were faithful where they are, God amazingly and consistently unveiled their future. So your job when it comes to God's will is to be faithful where you are. Be the best college student you can possibly be. Be the best friend right now you can possibly be. In fact, if you don't know that, you need to know that. That your first day on this college campus was your first day of your professional life. All right? Your professional life doesn't start after college. It started your first day of college. And your decisions and the way you're doing life in your professional career, which is your class and study and homework right now, in your relationships with your friends, and even in the decisions you're making, is shaping right now your future marriage. Like, you're either building a foundation that will allow you to step into marriage and step into the corporate world or step into a school as a teacher, step into your professional life and flourish, or you're digging a hole every day. One of the curses of 18 to 23 years old is they think that some point in the future there'll just be this magic switch that flips and all of a sudden you'll be a faithful person. And ready to engage work and ready to engage people and ready to engage a wife or a husband and ready to parent and ready to do all those things. And you need to know there is no switch. The decisions you make today are either preparing you for that next season of life or you're digging a hole that's going to make it even tougher. See, life isn't just life. Life is back to back to back to back to back seasons of life. My first 18 years in my parents' home was a season of life. Then I transitioned into college, and those 4 years were a season of life. Then I transitioned into a season of life as a young single professional. Then I transitioned into a season of life as a young married man. Then that season was over, and we had kids, and now I'm a father and a husband. Then we had a couple of kids, so that season's over. We're in a new season, and then we're going to have weird teenagers. Then that season will be a new season. Then by God's grace, one day we'll be empty nesters, and that's a new season. And like life isn't just life. It's back to back to back to back to back seasons of life. And how well you engage each season and how well you transition will, in a lot of ways, will determine your life. Be faithful where you are. Trust God with your future. Be faithful where you are. Be faithful. How about this one? Be a loner. Proverbs 18:1 says, "He who separates himself seeks his own desire." Some translations say, "seek his own lusts." The one who breaks away from the pack, who pursues isolation and individualism. Are you a loner? Are you unaccountable? You're the type of person that kind of knows everybody, but nobody knows you. Nobody knows really what's going on under the hood of your life. Really, you may smile and appear teachable, but no one really can tell you anything, can correct you. In fact, if anyone suggests an area of your life you're not doing well, like you get irate and angry and how dare them and who do they think they are, and you've got an unteachable, just loner heart. You need to know, biblically, that won't go well for you. There's a few loners I can think of. Samson. Yeah, that didn't end really well for him. Saul couldn't listen to Sam. Didn't end very well for Saul. I mean, that's a bad path you want to choose, to be a loner. How about this one? Be unforgiving. It's the glory of a man to overlook a transgression, but every fool is quick to quarrel. Are you unforgiving? Are you rigid? Do you enjoy a good fight? Do you love being divisive and stirring things up? Are you easily offended? Like, are there just no relational shocks on you? That the very first time someone wrongs you, you're devastated or irate or getting them back or anger comes up. Are you an unforgiving person? How about this one? Be irresponsible. Like smoke to the eye. You ever been at a campfire, bonfire, all of a sudden the wind shifts and the smoke from the fire hits your eyes, and just how irritating and painful that is. That's what the writer of Proverbs used. Like smoke to the eye and vinegar to the teeth is the faithless messenger to the one who trusted him. Are you responsible or are you irresponsible? Do you drop balls when people are counting on you, relying on you? Do you come through? Do you show up? Does your yes mean yes or your no mean no? Are you driven by people-pleasing that you can't imagine telling someone no in a moment, so you just always say yes, 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 but your calendar, your life can't sustain those yeses, so you're always saying yes and then canceling and backing out. Like your yes doesn't really mean yes and your no doesn't really mean no. Are you an irresponsible person? Are you two-faced? Proverbs 10:6, the mouth of the wicked conceal violence. Two-faced, being a backbiter. it's been said that gossip is saying something about somebody behind their back that you would never say to their face. Flattery is saying to their face what you never say about them behind their back. Why don't we learn to be gospel people who say to their face what we really need to say to their face, right? And not be a gossip or a flatterer and be two-faced. Like the way we relate to you is different from the way we talk about you. Nothing can destroy community more. How about this one? Be insensitive. He who blesses his neighbor with a loud voice in the morning, may it be reckoned him a curse. In the way that you live, especially you morning people, like, are you obnoxious in it? I remember having a roommate that would just, like, we lived this close to each other, right? We lived in one room together. And when he got up, he assumed we should both be up. And so he would get up, flip on his light, make coffee, and I'm just like, dude, I'm right here. Like, just, you know, we've had to work through that, right? Like, great training to be a great husband and a great wife is learning to be sensitive toward people. My decisions, my actions, being sensitive when you maybe go home this weekend and your parents go to bed earlier than you do. Like, do you even notice that? Do you notice how the screen door slams? Do you notice that maybe you just drank all your parents' milk, right? Like, maybe you should go, imagine that, you should go get them some new milk as a new grown adult. And I hope you're establishing a relationship as a grown adult to your grown adults. And like, you're now going home as an adult visitor to your parents' house. How do you go home? Great question to ask. I mean, is freshman, sophomore, junior years of college more just like 13th, 14th, and 15th grade of high school? Or are you becoming an adult, I hope, and doing what adults do? Adults don't sleep till noon, right? Adults take care of themselves and add value and are a blessing to the homes they return to and the homes that they're in. And they're sensitive to the other people around them. Are you a self-absorbed narcissist, or are you learning to get outside your, and we're all either a narcissist or a recovering narcissist, are you out, able to get outside yourself to actually understand how your decisions affect other people? How about this one? Be unsympathetic, hard, unfeeling. Proverbs 25:20 says, like vinegar on soda, or one who takes your coat on a cold day, or one who sings songs to a troubled heart. And so, boy, this one smacks the church right in the face. Basically, we don't mourn well with those who mourn. I mean, we are the ridiculous Christian subculture where everything's positive and encouraging. And man, somebody goes through something tragic or loss or sadness. I mean, we just don't do well. Even though one third of the Psalms are laments, when's the last time you've been to a lament service at your church? It's like everything's got to be happy and up. And it's like life's not happy and up. Most of life isn't happy and up. And so we're fallen men and fallen women in a fallen world with just this eternity on our heart. And even the best of our best days are mere silhouette of what one day once was, Genesis 1 and 2, what one day will be again when Jesus comes to make all things new in Revelation 19 and 20. But until then, man, we're just mere glimpses of eternity. But Ecclesiastes tells us eternity's on our heart. And so there's a lot of pain and sadness, and it's begging us to be able to recognize that, own that, and mourn with those who mourn. And not just Romans 8:28, everybody, and not just tell everybody to get happier, but to really be sympathetic toward loss and pain. How about this one? Be a mooch. Oh, laws, getting ready to get quiet in here. The leech has two daughters. Give, give. Are you merely a taker in life? Just tick, 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 tick. Like your whole life paradigm is, and tragically in our ridiculous parenting age, like we raise mooches, right? Like we, that just, you know, I got little 5 and 6 years, just mooches. Like, and that's, they don't make any money, don't pay any of the rent, they don't buy any food. They have all these expectations for Wii games and cookies and lunch and dinner, and they don't even think about that air conditioner they're sucking in their lungs and how I'm having to work to pay the bill to make it available for them to even suck into their lungs. And so they're just little mooches, but that's fine because they're 5. That's real weird if they're 25. See, because part of being an adult and part of being a life-giving spirit, 1 Corinthians 15, that Jesus was, that we're to model, is that we're not just takers. They're going to take, 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 take. Some of you relationships, take, 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 take. Take what you can get, you know, just always grabbing. Learn to be a giver. That's what authentic men are. That's what authentic women are. That's what Christ-likeness is. Everywhere Jesus went, things got better. Parties got better, people got better. Why? Because he was such a life-giving spirit. He made things better. He took initiative for the benefit of others, which is my favorite definition of leadership. Learning to take initiative for the benefit of others. Don't be a mooch. Don't be a liar. A false witness will go unpunished. The mouth that speaks lies will be stopped. Do you stretch the truth, tell lies, exaggerate? Don't do that. Be inconsistent. A friend loves at all times. A brother is born for adversity. And so it paints the picture of being this consistent friend. Are you a moody person? Or are you up one day, down the next, mad one day, happy the next, just an emotional train wreck? And what you need to know is that moody people are soon lonely people. Because when people aren't quite sure what to expect coming through the door, they quit expecting anything. You know, are you able to walk emotionally in such a way that you can be a consistent presence? Don't be crooked. Proverbs 20:17, bread obtained by falsehood is sweet to a man, but afterwards his mouth is filled with gravel. How about this one? Surround yourself with idiots. Proverbs 13:20 says, he who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools suffers harm. Not sure there'll be anything in your life that shapes your life more than the books you read and the people you hang out with. Like, who is that inner circle? Who are those people? What's your posse you're running with? Because you are way more influenced by them than you will ever know. And you are either going to run with thoroughbreds who love Jesus and make great decisions and are wanting to do incredible things in life, or you're going to be drugged into gutters, and you're going to wake up in places you'd say, I never thought I'd be here, I never thought I'd be the one doing that. And the pathway to that is isolation or running with the wrong crowd. The companion of fools suffer harm. How about this one? Be angry. There's one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise bring healing. Do you explode in anger? Do you tend to just be a spewer and just immediately just explode and then think a few minutes later some cheap apology is going to fix all that? Anger. Angry people are soon lonely people. How about this one? Be selfish. He who withholds grain shall be cursed, but blessed is he who gives. Learn now. College students are the most broke people in the world, but with your time, with your stuff, with your compliments, with your words, like, are you a giver or a taker? Have you learned to be unselfish, to be quick to encourage, to be quick to notice something, to share what it is you have, share your time, whatever God's entrusted you to hold those things loosely as a steward? And the scripture says, if we're faithful with a little, Lord, make us faithful with a lot. Like, the idea is faithfulness and stewarding our life well. How about this one? Be cruel. He that rejoices at another's calamity will not go in unpunished. Do you get a kick out of making fun out of people? Does it put a smile on your face to see someone trip and fall? Or to see someone fail at something? There's actually a weird, sick joy in you. We've got a word for that. It's called junior high. All right? So grow up. Be inflexible. Proverbs 14:4, where no oxen are, the barn is clean. You got to think about this one. Where there are no ox, the barn is clean. But much increase comes through the strength of the ox. So some of us are control freaks, like everything packaged perfectly, like every box checked. Even if we do something that day that wasn't on our to-do list, we're one of those weird people that'll add the box and write it and check it. You know, like, we just love things packaged and completed. And what it's saying here is you got to be careful, because there can be a control freak in you that actually creates a life that's not very productive because you value the control more than the productivity of your own life or church or organization or college or city. And what it's saying here is you've got to have ox in order to, man, have a farm and grow things and sell things and expand. But the problem is those ox live in barn and they stink and they relieve themselves. And so I don't want that in my barn. And so you got to be careful. I talk about this in our church all the time, man. I would rather have oxen and a real messy organization that is productive than a neat, clean, tidy 9-5 cubicle world that is producing absolutely nothing. So I, you know, young leaders are kind of like oxen at time. Careful about that. All right, be unteachable, a person who's never wrong, won't deal with any issues. A wise man seeks to understand his way, but the fool of follies is deceit. How about this one? Be pessimistic. A joyful heart has a continual feast, but all the days of the afflicted are bad. Some of you, just like that old Saturday Night Live character, just Debbie Downer, you know, wah, wah, wah. Like, you're just half full, pessimistic, world is falling. I hate myself, everybody hates me, hate this, hate going to chapel, hate, you know. I tell a lot of people, I was at lunch with the guy the other day, first six things he told me were things he liked, and I was like, this is easy. Things he didn't like about Memphis, I was like, this is going to be an easy lunch. Move! Things are so great where you came from, whew, get back there. Like, or listen, always somewhere else, you know, and just, oh, it's just so great. Some of y'all here, you know, all you do is talk about your hometown. How, you know, we just want to say, man, did you go? What are you doing here? Or, one day when I leave Jackson, I'm heading out to blah, 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 you know. But it's just like, be here, be here, be here. Don't be a pessimist. Be overly sensitive. That's a good way to blow up relationships. The wise man conceals dishonor, but when he's hurt, but in the heart of fools, vexing is readily known. Again, can't roll with it, can't absorb. You readily know with your vexation. As soon as you're mad, everybody knows it. How about this one? Be jealous. Proverbs 27:8. Anger is wrath is a flood. Who can stand before jealousy? How about this one? Be cold. Better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. Have you learned to express love? Have you learned, not text message love, have you learned to actually, with another human, not Facebook message love, have you like learned to actually look a man, look a woman, look your mom, look your dad, look an old friend in the eye and express appreciation, express thankfulness, express love? Like, to be able to do that, you're going to have to do that with a spouse. You're sure going to have to do that with kids, to hug them and squeeze them and love them and let them feel your warmth and affection, and that you're a warm, affectionate person who's not stunted so much emotionally they can't express love. One of the greatest things I've done in the past few years are write tributes to my parents and to read them about things I appreciate in them. They were far from perfect, but be able to read to them and express to them with my kids watching, my family watching. Like, I don't want to go to my grave with unexpressed love, and I don't want anybody I love to go to their grave wondering how I feel about them. Are you an expressive person? Don't be cold. Arrogance, nobody likes arrogance. Pride deceives destruction, and arrogance comes before failure. Be insubordinate, the eyes that mocks its mother, scorns its father, the birds of the air will pluck it out. How great season of life for you guys to learn submission to authority, like learning to submit to the authorities in your life. A life that's unable to submit to authority is in a bad way. The rest of that is you're going to have a miserable next 30, 40 years of your life if you can't submit to authority. Be unconfrontable. The scoffer hates the one that reproves him. He'll not go to the wise. A fool is wiser in his own eyes than seven wise men who could give him an answer. Are you unteachable, unconfrontable? Can wise people speak into your life? 29 different proverbs that warn us in relationships. And I'll end on this one. One to build your life on. It was read at the beginning of chapel. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understandings. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. You learn to lean into Jesus, trust Jesus, kindle your affections for Jesus. Find out whatever those things are that kindle your affections for Jesus, and do those things a lot. Find out whatever those things are that dampen and deaden your affections for Jesus, and quit doing them. And love him and trust him and pursue him. There's not life found anywhere else other than him. And then pray that he will allow you to have a relational intelligence based on the wisdom of his word and the guidance of his spirit to be able to relate well with other people, to add value, to be a very likable person. You'll never hurt for a job. You'll never hurt for fun things to do. You'll be a great spouse. You'll be a great parent if you can learn to relate well. Father, thank you for the truths of your word. Thank you for these men and women, administration here, the leadership here, the students. Thank you for their passion and love for you. I pray this morning, Father, that even though we took a different angle through Proverbs, I pray that ultimately Jesus was made much of, that our affections were stirred toward him. And I pray for these students as they relate, as they, Lord, trust you, as they walk with you, that you will just continue to chisel and chip away and build into them a strong ability to relate well with you and relate well with others, to be a life-giving presence wherever God would have them, here and then beyond here, that they could move to other cities and take on other opportunities and enter into other churches and friendship circles and be a blessing and be a life-giving spirit and be a leader who just radiates Jesus as he was a life-giving spirit. That's how Paul described him. So, Father, help us be those kind of men, those kind of women. We thank you for this time. In Jesus' name, amen. We're dismissed. Thanks.